Welcome everyone to the HP Global Employee Ownership Podcast Series. Today we have a really great conversation with Ryan Nash, Division President of Nash PNM, about growing up in the construction business, but also what it was like being acquired by HP Global. As always, we have with us CEO of HP Global, Bob Whalen, and Senior Vice President of People and Culture, Stacy Baum. Just a few housekeeping items before we get started. We recognize that this podcast is available to the general public, but we just want to say that the views expressed in it are in the context of HP Global and may not apply to broader audiences. With that, Stacy, take it away.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. I think we're going to have a great discussion with Ryan Nash and Bob Whalen today, talking a little bit about the Nash PNM acquisition. So I think where we'd like to start today is just by introducing Ryan to everyone. Welcome to the podcast with us, Ryan.
Greetings. And yeah. Excited to be here.
Thank you. And then we're also just looking for you to give us a little insight into how you joined the Nash PM company and the family connection to the business.
Yeah, we're celebrating our 50th year in business this year, and something we're really proud of. My grandfather started it in 1974, and here we are today. About me in particular, so I'm third generation. I started, as early as grade school summers. My dad would bring me in, and I'd hang out in the fab shop and sweep the floors or ride around with our truck driver. Through grade school summers and things of that nature, the business has always intrigued me, always liked being around it. And, riding around with our truck driver and seeing all the jobs that we did, it was always just, it always was very intriguing to me. And which is, why I wanted to always try to find a way that I could have an impact in the business. And so in high schools, summers in high schools, I did some work out in the field, also interned and shadowed some people here in the office, John Gallico, our estimator being one of them, Jonathan Brokaw, and operations was another one that I shadowed in a summer in high school. And then graduated high school. I went to Auburn University for 2 years studying building construction management, and was there for 2 years. At that time, the business had booked a very large healthcare facility in Jacksonville, Florida, that you may have heard of, called the Mayo Clinic. It was one of the biggest healthcare jobs that we had gotten at that time. And my dad had kind of told me, like, hey, I could really use you on this project. You've got your AA up there. It's a really good time to consider transferring down here to Jacksonville. And University of North Florida has a really good construction school, and they have an executive program that's kind of structured around work, where you can actually work during the day and take classes at night. At the time, finishing up my sophomore year at Auburn, I was not going to say I was overly thrilled about transferring down and working there in the day and going to school at night, but looking back on it, it was probably the most powerful and influential 2 years of my life. It enabled me to start, building relationships in the field. And, I was actually working with Greg Ellis. He was the project manager, and he put me to work. And, I was on the MedGas crew. By the end of those 2 years there, I was essentially running my own crew, and graduated from University of North Florida. And the day after graduation, I moved to Fort Benning, Georgia. Was there for 2.5 years, working as a quality control manager. At that time, that was the biggest project that we had done. It was a $42 million project for some trainee barracks at Sand Hill and Harmony Church at that location. And great experience for me. At the end of those 2 years, I had moved up to project manager. I was going to go manage my first job, and went to Sumter, South Carolina, at Shaw Air Force Base. I worked there for another two and a half years between Shaw Air Force Base and Fort Jackson in Columbia, South Carolina. You know, from then I started my journey back to Florida and, you know, continued to be an operations manager, and then moved up to vice president of operations, and then ultimately about 4.5 years ago, division president. So it's been a really fun ride. You know, as I'd mentioned, it's always kind of been my dream as I was a kid to have an impact on this business and continue the legacy that my grandfather started. And it's worked out really well.
It's a great story, Ryan. I think before we jump into what led your dad to make the decision to look to sell the business, how difficult it was for you as a field employee staying away from home. And because I think that's something a lot of our team members can relate to. So what were some of the challenges with being so far from home?
Yeah, you know, I mean, from the time when I was very early in my career, you know, my dad being that he was second generation, me being third, you know, he had already kind of experienced some of the difficulties that he knew were in store for me, you know, of coming in with your last name being Nash and, you know, earning the guy's respect. And that was one of the things that my dad always had told me is that, you know, respect's not given, it's earned. And, you know, you're going to have to start in the ditches and, you know, get in there, get dirty with the guys, you know, go hang out with them after work, you know, go have dinner with them. And, you know, you got to earn their respect. You know, they're not, if anything, it's going to be harder for you because your last name is Nash than easier. So I really heeded that advice and really tried to always make sure that there was no task that I was going to ask somebody else to do that I wasn't willing to do myself. And, you know, it, you know, got a lot of good friendships still to this day, you know, that I'm very close with a lot of people out in the field. And, you know, just continue to keep my nose down and work hard. And, you know, if you continue to do that, you know, opportunities will present themselves just like some of the other younger guys that we got coming up in the business. And, you know, challenges, I will say, just like everybody that's been a project manager for us, as you know, in this business, we have to go where the work is. And that's one of the things that's made us kind of bulletproof over the years and enabled us to keep our doors open through some of the tough times is our ability to travel. And travel was hard, you know, being fresh out of college with no girlfriend, you know, going to these military towns for, you know, 5-6 years was tough on the personal life. And, you know, even shared some of those discussions, you know, with my father. And, you know, at times it was almost to the point where the breaking point where it's like, man, you know, I'm 6 hours from home and, you know, work's going great, but, you know, the personal life is challenging. And, you know, and basically he just, you know, told me, hey man, just stick with it, you know, and even my grandfather used to tell me, you know, anything worth having is not easy. So, you know, kind of, you know, been on the edge a few times, early in my career, but, you know, glad I stuck with it, glad I persevered, you know, and just like, you know, others in this business, you know, that have, you know, hey, been on the road for a while, really wanting to plant some roots, you know, we've made accommodations, you know, for some of those people, you know, just like the Georgia division that we just opened up for some of our, talented performers there in Georgia, you know, if you put in the time, you know, we, and you're creating the value, you know, we're going to find a way to make it work for you. And, if I can say anything is, you know, one of the, you know, that I'm most happy is that I did not, you know, pursue something else. And I stayed the course and stayed with it. And, you know, I've got a great team here that I run the business with. And, you know, we have fun here every day. I'm not going to say every day's fun. There are challenges, of course, but, you know, I couldn't be happier with the team and where things ended up. So
I love that message, Ryan. I think it's, each one of us, every employee has a challenge, and sometimes it's a personal challenge, not just a work challenge. So I really like the message of being able to be open and honest and share with your teammates what's going on and struggles and try to work towards a solution together.
Stacy, could I just add quickly, you know, relative to that, I think it's really important, you know, for leaders to make themselves available to the employees that they're responsible for to, you know, to actively work, you know, to build that type of relationship. Obviously, Ryan's situation was with his father. And of course, you know, that might be somewhat easier to, in some cases, not easier, but in other cases, easier than with a supervisor to share what's going on in your life, you know, and work together to figure out, you know, how you bridge those gaps. But it's also important, you know, for the employees to actively work, to have a relationship with their supervisor, you know, so you can have honest conversations. I can't tell you how frustrating it is as a business when you have somebody that's going through challenges and they decide to go in a different direction with their career, but no conversation ever happens, you know, and that really lies with both parties. The supervisor has got to work hard to establish a relationship where your employees are comfortable having those conversations. And the employee really has to be, you know, open enough that the supervisor knows what's going on in their life, you know, so they can, you know, work to make that happen. It really comes from both sides. You know, what's lost? You know, if you're open and can't make the situation work, you're no worse off than not saying anything at all and just, you know, going in a different direction. So I think it's just a really, you know, important lesson for no matter where we sit in those relationships, how important it is, you know, the supervisor and, you know, employee relationship and building a relationship that's open, you know, and honest so that you can work together to accomplish all the goals that you have, you know, on both sides.
Really good points, Bob. Thank you. Ryan, if you could walk us through your dad's decision to sell the business or at least consider selling the business, and then we'll talk a little bit with Bob about how HP Global came to be interested in acquiring Nash PM.
Sure. Yeah, it's a story that I try to tell at all of our monthly orientations that we have with our employees, just explaining the story. So, you know, my dad had been, so previously, whenever my dad bought my grandfather out, you know, over a period of 10 years, starting in the 90s, our business was not near the size that it is currently. But he was able, you know, we were doing, you know, somewhere between $2-3 million a year, you know, in the early stages. And that, of course, grew throughout it. But we were able to use essentially, with it being a family business at that time, the, you know, the profits earned from the business to pay my grandfather out on the equity that he had built over a 10-year period. And we were able to do that without having to take out, you know, a huge line of credit or, you know, a big loan. You know, fast forward from the 90s until, you know, the mid tens of 2000, you know, we had grown the business 10 times, essentially. We were having 30, 40, you know, pushing $50 million years. And with that growth became a tremendous amount of stress. My dad was still personally signing for bonds. You know, all of his personal assets, were on the line, you know, essentially if, you know, if we had a bad job or if there was a bad, you know, event or, you know, anything, it was a tremendous amount of stress on him. There were times when times were tough and, you know, he had to, you know, remortgage the house and, you know, that was very stressful for him, you know, and you know, making sure, you know, throughout all that time, you know, I'm proud to say that there's never been an employee that's ever missed a paycheck here. And I know that there's a lot of people that are greatly appreciative for that, but that came with a lot of stress on his behalf. And, you know, I'd say around 2014, that stress started to catch up with him and he was having some stress-related illnesses, went into AFib, with his heart rhythm. And this was coming from a guy that's never spent a day in the hospital, you know, his whole life. And here he is laid up in the hospital on like the third day, whenever we finally got his heart back into rhythm. And, you know, I was sitting in there with him and the doctor had come in, and basically the doctor had said that, you know, this is all stress related, you know, everything else, you know, you're healthy, but this stuff is all stress related. And there's a couple of different ways to approach this. You've got to manage your stress. You got to get your stress down. And I don't think that in your current capacity and the way that you're running your business, that you're going to continue to be able to do this. The alternative, if you don't do something about it, is it's going to kill you. And so I was glad that the doctor was very blunt, because I think it, you know, made my dad kind of reassess, you know, what's important. So we had a conversation, and, you know, being that the business had grown even more, than what it had, you know, under when my dad purchased it from my grandfather, it was going to take a pretty healthy line of credit or loan, to pay my dad the equity that he had built in the business. And at the time, the senior leadership team, you know, we have very long tenured people here that are on the leadership team that are kind of towards the tail end of their careers and may not necessarily be overly excited about signing up on a long-term note, you know, to pay my father out. So essentially it was up to me on whether or not I wanted to get a note to pay him out. And, you know, it was like, that was what we were trying to avoid, was me going through the same type of stress that my dad was currently going through. And I said, Dad, you know, what if we, you know, we find an agent, quietly put the business on the market, see if we can find somebody that, you know, that would be interested in buying the business, and will kind of let us continue to run it in the fashion that we do. So we did do that. We quietly put the business on the market. We had a couple of investors and people that were interested. We did a couple of interviews with them and realized quickly that these private equity roll-ups generally want to just increase regional footprint. And, you know, being that there's so many of them everywhere, they kind of just want you to stay in your, like, so for our example, you know, they didn't really want us to leave Central Florida. Like, you know, we have things everywhere else. We just need you to focus on Central Florida. And that was kind of left a little bit of a bad taste in our mouth, because if we had stuck to that philosophy in the past, we would have been out of business. And we didn't need handcuffs. We needed to make sure that we could continue to grow and, you know, and if we need to go out of state, you know, that we could do that. So after the first couple of interviews didn't go necessarily as planned, you know, Bob Whalen walks in the door, and you know, it was really interesting. You know, at the time, you know, HB Global hadn't even been formed yet. You know, it was just HB McClure and IT Landis, and Bob had stated that he was very interested in the Florida market, and was very interested in, you know, the way that we do business. And obviously the numbers that we were doing were great. And, you know, he was more focused on how can I see a lot of growth opportunity here, you know, and being that McClure and Landis did a lot more service and special projects. And I mean, I know they do a ton of commercial too, but that was a side of the business that we hadn't even done. And he's like, man, special projects and service. He's like, I can help you, you know, with that growth. And, you know, he was just very, very culturally aligned. You could tell that, like, the other businesses, and he introduced us to, you know, some of the players at HB McClure and Kern and IT Landis. And, you know, they all had very positive and great things to say. And to us, it was a good deal. It was a good cultural fit. And, you know, the fact that Bob wanted to find a way for me to continue to carry on my dream of, you know, running the business and continuing the legacy, it has been just, that's how we ended up. It was just a great experience, you know, through the acquisition.
That's a fantastic story, Ryan. Bob, do you want to share from your perspective of why you were interested in expanding to Florida and particularly to Nash?
Yeah, I think we were, you know, at that point, you know, go back to early 2017, you know, I think we saw real value in the diversification, you know, that we could achieve, you know, getting outside of Pennsylvania into a higher growth market. That certainly was a big driver. And we very consciously were trying to diversify from a geography standpoint. What we didn't realize that we would also accomplish is diversifying the type of business that we were doing. So we didn't do any hospital work, any material hospital work in the markets we were in Pennsylvania. And we didn't do any material government work at the time. And so that became, that was the first time that we really saw the benefit in not only the, you know, the geography diversification, but in the type of customers. And since we've added, you know, life sciences in Boston, we've also, you know, added more large construction, both through W.R. Nash and Bell, you know, high rise residential in Arizona. So there is a bunch of diversification that we've accomplished over time. But that was really the first time that we started to see that. And, you know, we were still at a phase in our development where, you know, we were really open to what that, where this company, what this company could become. And, you know, I think, Nash P&M was our first real experience of stepping outside of what we were to being open to what we've become. And it turned out it's a big reason for our success. You know, as you look out over the next 7 or 8 years after that is frankly the success that Nash, you know, P&M had. And, you know, Ryan is a great example of the succession of the company was in place. You know, we're almost always in a situation where the owner is looking for a way to get their liquidity and to succeed out of the business. But some of our, you know, favorite successions are that of a family member that wants to stay in the business. And right. And it's, you know, one of the reasons that we keep the brands in place. You know, you hear it in Ryan's voice, how proud he is of Nash Plumbing and Mechanical. And he has a family pride about that is additional. And so, you know, that's been his dream for a long time. And if we can find a situation, you know, where we can help facilitate that. And in this case, you know, Ryan not take on the stress around the financial pressure that he would have had to take, you know, that's where we come in. And I think the other thing is we, you know, Ryan said it, we saw great potential in this business. And, you know, Cliff's stress was actually acting as a restrictor place for the business. And we were able to come in and say, hey, Ryan and Dave Mears at the time, who played a very important role over the first 3 years of the transition as well, you know, we freed them up to take on new things and to take risk and to do things that they wouldn't have been comfortable with in the past. And, you know, I've said since the start, I think that that's the biggest thing, you know, that HP Global did for Nash P&M is we freed them up to be the best version of themselves. You know, we didn't come in and, you know, the business is not operated vastly different than what it was when we showed up. But we did free them up to take on more new things than they would have otherwise. And I think that that's probably, you know, the biggest role that we've seen. And I think it's really, you know, it was the, you know, the fuel that really lit the fire in what HP Global has become over the last 7 or 8 years.
Bob, what would you say are some differences in the acquisition process of Nash versus IT Landis?
Well, I will say this. You know, it's a core part of who we are just to get a little bit better each day. You know, it's kind of how we approach things, and our acquisition process has been a reflection of that, you know, so we have gotten different, you know, as we approach, how we go about acquisitions, and in the early years with IT Landis, I spent, you know, multiple days a week for a full year, you know, actually on the ground. Did the same thing at Nash PNM where I was there, you know, for 6 months. You know, really every day getting to know the business. It was a very different business, trying to identify, you know, how we could add value to the situation. While, you know, a big part of who we are is to give autonomy to the business, you know, we always have an eye out, you know, for how we can add value. We just approach it a little differently than some others in that we're patient about, you know, making those changes that we think and really allow the business, you know, to make those changes. And Ryan could probably speak better about some of those things. But, you know, I think we approached, you know, how we analyzed the jobs from a financial standpoint. You know, I think that evolved over time. But we didn't just come in first day and say, you know, you guys are going to do this. You know, we tried to get them to buy into the value that this could add to them, you know, as a business. And so that's pretty much how we affected. Very specifically, you know, our company is so different today than what it was then. You know, I think back on what a big part of this acquisition was about, getting bonding in place for the company. And we didn't have the balance sheet, you know, that we have now. You know, talk about being nervous about, you know, financially being on the line. I mean, you know, I was that guy that was financially on the line. But, you know, that all came together as the deal went through. I mean, this deal was much harder to get done than, frankly, any other deal. It took the longest period of time for us to get it. And getting the bonding in place for this deal was the biggest challenge of what we had to do. But they needed it. You know, we made a conscious decision with IT Landis that, yes, we didn't have the bonding capacity or the balance sheet to support the bonding that we needed when we did IT Landis, but it was a very small piece of our business. And so we could say, hey, if we lost a job because we couldn't get it bonded, you know, we would just, you know, live with that and work around it. Well, I couldn't do that with Nash PNM. You know, when they're doing hospital work and government work, they need to know they have access to bonding to be able to do the work that they do. And Cliff would have shot me if we came down there and couldn't take on a good job because we didn't have the bonding capacity. So that was a big part of it. And that took a lot to get in place. And we were also relatively young in our progression as an ESOP, you know? And so we had to keep our, we had, at the time we had outside ESOP trustees that we had to keep happy. And, you know, frankly, I think it was some of the experience around the trustees and having, you know, them have a say in how we did acquisitions that really was the starting point of us deciding that we were going to bring that trusteeship, you know, in house. 2 years later, we brought the trusteeship in house. And it was largely because we needed the flexibility with our acquisitions, you know, not to have somebody having us do something with an acquisition because it protected their risk. You know, I wasn't interested in protecting the risk of the trustee or the trustee of attorney that was involved. I'm worried about our participants. And so, you know, that was really, I think, a big thing that happened at that point, to where we really felt like we needed to have control to make the decisions that was in the best interest of our company. And I think it's played out that way, you know, for us as we move forward.
Ryan, how was the acquisition received by the Nash employees? I'm sure this wasn't something, being a third generation family-owned business, that the employees were expecting.
Yeah, so certainly, you know, once we realized that this deal with Bob was gaining traction, and we had worked through a lot of the due diligence on, you know, making sure the financials were all vetted and everything of that nature, we realized that we were going to have a very tough conversation with our essentially, you know, 200 employees at the time. And it was something that, how are we going to do this without causing panic and, you know, people jumping and, you know, you know, honestly, it was just something that we had sat down. We brought everybody. We were packed in like a can of sardines in one of our small conference rooms at the old office. And we brought everybody in. And, you know, there's no easy way to have a conversation about, you know, a change in ownership, you know, in a family run business that's been around for 43 years at that point in time. But dad, you know, brought everybody in. Of course he was, you know, emotional about it. And everybody, you know, understands that my dad's a very genuine person. And so it came as a big shock. I mean, dad just basically said, hey, listen, guys, I've gotten to a position in my life where I've got to make some changes. And, you know, we've talked about a couple different options. And, you know, we're going to tell you a little bit about, you know, the reasons why we had to do this and the company that we've partnered with to buy us out. And I'm going to tell you about some of the companies that we did entertain and did not come to a deal. And so I think that certainly it was not a whole lot was said other than the words that were coming out of my dad's mouth until he finished the story. And then there were a lot of questions. There was some uncertainty, but one of the biggest things after the acquisition that really helped is, I mean, Bob was present. He was there every day for 6 months. And it wasn't like Bob was, you know, trying to snoop around to find out what he could do to change the business. And, you know, he was just truly trying to absorb and understand what it is that we were doing and made it clear to our teams. I mean, even when he would sit in on bids with us that, hey, I'm here to observe and just understand. And, you know, he made mention several times, like, you guys are a successful business. You know, the proof is in the pudding. I'm not here to change that. I just want to understand. And I think everybody really appreciated the fact that, you know, he was still giving us the autonomy to run the business that, you know, that we had ran successfully for 43 years prior. And he just wanted to know how he could help. And, you know, he'd mentioned the restrictor plate of dad's personal risk. I mean, that was a big thing. Bob was like, hey, listen, I don't have a problem with you going and chasing more work if you can find the right people to go and do it. And we did that. We've had some bad ones. We've had some good ones. But, you know, we're coming off of the best year we've ever had in our 50 years. You know, we're sitting in a brand new facility that he helped us get with a state-of-the-art, you know, prefabrication shop, you know, right here to my right. And, you know, just couldn't be more happy. But, you know, one of the big things too is, you know, Bob had mentioned is, you know, EOS. EOS was a very big changing point for us. It was, you know, with us being kind of privately a family-owned business, you know, we didn't just have the financials just hanging out there for everybody and their brother to see. And, you know, there were some decisions that were made pretty close to the chest at that time. Because my dad had essentially all the risk. So he was kind of making all the decisions, you know, not by himself, but with a very small group of people. And EOS, you know, has empowered me to take all of these long tenured employees that we've had. You know, Jonathan Brokaw is one that's 30 plus years, you know, John Gallico is in his high 20s, you know, with us here. And same thing with Greg and everybody on our leadership team. So it's kind of shifted that to where, you know, we meet weekly. We talk about things out in the open. All of our employees get to see our financials. Everybody understands that they're an employee owner. That took some time to kind of for everybody to kind of grab the concept and see that take off and grow and see the value that's there. But those are the big changes that I think that were all to the better that kind of helped maybe quiet down some of those reservations that, you know, is this just going to be, you know, a corporate, you know, roll up company that's just going to come pretty us up and put us back on the street and sell us to who knows. It couldn't be further from that. And I truly believe that everybody that's here is in a better position than where they were pre-acquisition. So it's been great.
Thanks, Ryan. Bob, from your perspective, I know Ryan mentioned you spent about 6 months living in Florida. So what was that like for you to spend time away from your family, the other companies of IT Landis and HB McClure, and get to know Nash a little bit?
Well, it was... I think for me, First of all, it was difficult for some of the same reasons, you know, that Ryan, you know, articulated. I was away from home and away from my family. Now I have, you know, done a good bit of business travel as part of my career. So traveling some was not, but it was certainly, you know, much more. And, you know, at the time I still had, you know, kids at home that were in high school that were going through high school sports and, you know, all of that stuff, and family's very, you know, important to me. And so working around that and trying to, you know, make that work. I remember, you know, when we had the employee meeting to announce the deal to the employees of Nash P&M, that, you know, I had to get out of there and back for a high school football game that night. So, you know, had to figure, you know, all of those things out. But it was a tremendous learning experience, you know, for me to get to know the people, to really spend some time with the folks. You know, at that time, we were a much smaller company, and I had, you know, kind of a history of doing breakfasts and meeting with employees, you know, in relatively small groups that we spent time. And I remember with Ryan, you know, doing breakfast meetings in Pensacola and in Georgia, you know, and all over, where we really sat down with small groups of employees, you know, just to show that we're a real company, you know, too, with real people and do all the same things. You know, we talked about how, you know, the Phillies were going to kick the Braves' tails, and, you know, all of those things is, you know, we're just, you know, real folks too. But one of my favorite stories to tell now about the deal with Nash P&M, you know, really back to your lessons learned, Stacy, you know, question, is we held the employee meeting before the deal was actually closed. And that's something I would never do again, because, you know, back to managing your stress. Well, talk about stress when you've communicated to employees that you're doing this deal, and there's still open issues. I mean, real open issues that aren't resolved yet that you've got to get through. And as I mentioned, some of that was with the ESOP trustees. And I remember we held the meeting with Nash P&M, and I'm driving back to the airport and I'm on the phone, and with some colorful language, our ESOP attorney was Ed Renninger, who's a great guy. And we laugh about this today. But, you know, I made it very clear to him, I was holding him personally accountable if we didn't get this deal done. And I had to tell these employees we weren't getting it done. You know, that's one of the stories you remember and the lessons learned. We would never do an employee meeting now until the deal's absolutely closed, because there's just so many things that can happen with an acquisition. And you never know when you're going to run into, you know, a problem in a deal that just can't be solved. And so we learned that. And so that time away, you know, really started to reinforce to me our strategy around giving autonomy to our businesses to continue to operate the way they have historically done. And that being said, we as HB Global or HB Mechanical team are looking for ways to add value to those businesses. And I think the best way to do that, even when you identify something that you think can be done better, is to do that over time, and to get buy-in from the business is something that they really want to do. I know Ryan and his group approach, you know, how they are evaluating each one of their projects from a financial standpoint very differently today than what they did when we came in. But that's not something, you know, like we jammed down their throat, you know, first day and said, you're going to do this differently. You know, I still remember the meeting. We sat, you know, in their conference room, and I can remember, you know, how we evaluated the Miami Convention project, you know, was essentially being determined by folks that weren't on the ground there. And I remember the feedback we got from on the ground, memory bank, and said, the people on the ground actually, you know, have a better idea of what's truly going on, you know, than some of us do back in the office. And so it's just those experiences that you pick up along the way. And that was a big piece. And just the family atmosphere of that company is incredible. You know, I was lucky enough to be at a couple of the early Christmas parties after we acquired them, you know, and you just really get to see, you know, almost 50 years of goodwill that was built up between the business, the people that work there, you know, and the family that was responsible for the business. And it's just a lesson of how important every one of our actions, you know, is to, you know, align with what we say we are. And, you know, that's what we try to do every day.
Thank you, Ryan and Bob, for all of this great discussion today around Nash PM joining the HP Global family of companies. I think it's been great. Do either of you have any other stories that you'd like to share?
Well, I think there's one story I'd like to share. It's because, you know, one of our core strategies is that we give the business owner an opportunity not only to get the liquidity that they're trying to get out of the business from all their years of sweat equity, but we allow them through our ESOP plan and in essence to take care of the employees that help get them there. You know, any of those of us that are smart realize that we don't do this by ourselves, that all of our employees are critical to making all this happen. And I think one of the most memorable things for me out of the Nash PM transaction was what Cliff did for his employees as he was leaving. You know, not only did he take care of his employees by selling to a company that was going to continue to allow them to operate and feel a great sense of pride in their business, but he also, you know, decided and that would have access to an ESOP that they've grown great values over the, you know, the last, 7 years since they've been part of our company. But Cliff paid out a tremendous amount in bonuses to the employees that work for Nash P&M out of his purchase price, you know, and our whole strategy is around, you know, giving them a vehicle where they can do that without doing that. But Cliff went over above, and the appreciation that from all of his employees that I saw, you know, at their business, the Christmas party was not long after the sale, but just working with them and how appreciative they were of the Nash family and what they had done for their families is something that I frankly will never forget. And the lesson that Cliff really gave all of us through doing that. And so that's honestly my most memorable thing about the Nash P&M transaction is the way that Cliff, you know, handled the situation and, you know, giving back to his employees that helped get him there.
Fantastic story. I think I've heard Ryan, which I really like the language, refer to you, Bob, and HP Global as being culturally inviting. And I think that's just a really good example of how well aligned Nash is with the HP Global culture. So great story. Okay. Well, I appreciate everyone's time. Thank you so much for joining us today. And really appreciate you, Ryan and Bob, for sharing your stories.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. If you have questions for Bob, we'd love to hear them and answer them in future podcasts. Feel free to submit them to eopodcast@hb-global.com, and we'll see you next time.